Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, May 28, 2009. This is Doug Kelly here with Grant Rubendonst.
Hey, happy Thursday night, everybody, and welcome.
It just occurred to me that, jeepers, we got 5 months almost gone here this year. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and last year at this time, we were talking about the Phoenix Lander.
Yeah, really. Boy, that's been a year already.
Yeah, man, time has flown by, eh?
Yes, it has. It always does. We welcome everybody to the show, the program tonight. We're going to talk about some of the different tips that makes an effective investigator, and we'll get
pull
to that.
Up your most comfortable chair and sit back and get ready and have a nice conversation, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to have a candid conversation, laid back. If you want to call in and join in, please do. The number's there on your screen. You can also click on that, click the talk button if you have a headset on your computer, and we'd love to hear from you. We don't usually get that many call-ins, and we certainly invite you to call in if you just want to joke around and play games like some of our previous callers that don't bother, but if you've got something to add to the program, we'd love to hear from you, or you can ask your questions in chat or make comments. We'll pass those along. Just want to remind our members and non-members that several recent inclusions in Paranexus that I'm just going to keep talking about so we can get the word out. Number one, the Certified Paranexus Field Investigator Program is up and going. We now have 15 field investigators in 9 states and 3 countries. So if you want to get in on that, go to Paranexus.org. You'll see the information on become a CPFI, Certified Paranexus Field Investigator, and it will tell you everything there that you got to do. We'd love to have you. We're looking for solid, grounded people who have a passion for investigations and research to join up. What else? We also have web hosting now with our memberships, and that's something that, a few people have taken advantage of, current members. But that's something I'm just going to keep pushing because that's a good deal, folks. Memberships are $39 a year, and you get real live web hosting. That means a website. Actually, you can do up to 25 domain names. And so you can have several websites on your account. And it's just a good deal. I mean, I don't think you can get web hosting anywhere for $39, not like this one anyway. So, it's included in memberships, in Paranexus memberships. We also made memberships available for $450 a month. If you prefer to go monthly, you can do that, $450 a month, and get all the benefits and everything. We'd love to have you as a member. So go to Paranexus.org and join if you haven't already. And if you have, then take advantage of the web hosting. We also have Parabids going. It's not going real fast. We're looking for folks who want to list things. That's kind of the problem with starting those things up. You have to get a lot of people to list, but it's free to list, and the fees are extremely low. If you're used to paying exorbitant prices on eBay or others, then give this a shot because it'll save you money. What else? We got the pair of you going, Kevin Costas. I'm on that. And we do have a new staff member all on that. We have Jessica Jones joined the staff today, last night actually. She's going to be our public relations and meet coordinator. Responsible for promoting Paranexus, getting the word out. She's already done a great job. She's already created a MySpace page and a Twitter page on Facebook, and she's done an outstanding job, and it's just really nice to have her with us. So we welcome her.
Terrific. Welcome, Jen. Jennifer, right?
No, Jessica.
Jennifer, right?
Jessica.
Jessica, I'm sorry. Jessica, welcome.
Yeah. So it's good to have her. We're continuing the registry database is where the service field investigator is as well. And we've got some cool stuff in there. And we're encouraging folks to get cases. If you've got investigator and you've done a case, why not go and submit the information? Just remember that no client information is presented to the public. To get folks to submit cases and start building that database. So if you've got a parapsychological or haunting case or a UFO or even an abduction case, go and plug it in there and get that working. That's going to be a good thing. So I think I've mentioned the most of some of the new stuff. We're trying to keep Paranexus active and alive and adding new things and making it a good value for members. So let's get to our topic. Our topic is how to be an effective investigator or what makes an effective investigator. Of course, if you've been listening to this program for any length of time, we've chatted about various things over the last year plus, things that make an effective investigator. But I'd like to know what you think as well. We're going to be sharing some of our ideas, and we'd like to get yours too. Grant tells me that there's a lot of distortion tonight. If you're hearing distortion, would you let us know in the chat room? We'd sure appreciate it. Maybe we can try and do something with that. Grant, on the topic of an effective investigator, we've talked about, it's not somebody who can just use equipment effectively. It's somebody who has the groundedness. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a combination of things, but I think the person has to be curious by nature. They have to be very inquisitive about this. They should have some idea about the subject matter. And most of our best investigators have come with a pretty wide knowledge base, wouldn't you say, Doug, of the paranormal and ufology? Or if they don't have a wide knowledge base, they're somewhat specialized in what they feel is their area of expertise.
Yep. I mean, it's good to have the passion. It's good to have the interest and the knowledge. And of course, depending on whatever your specialty is, whether it's UFOs or hauntings or both, it's good to know a lot of stuff and read up on that. I'm going to address the distortion a little bit, see if I can correct anything. Give me a second. Grant, what else is involved in being an effective investigator? And I'll play with it.
Sure. I think, as Doug alluded to, you have to be, once you have the combination of the basic inclusiveness about, say, for instance, paranormal is what your primary focus is, I think you have to also have not only the curiosity, but you have to keep it well balanced with a little bit of viewing everything from all possible perspectives. When we have somebody that comes in and they have some difficulty looking at an investigation or aspects of an investigation from only one perspective, it just seems like they're not as effective as an investigator. So I think that if you have a combination of some background knowledge, you're a pretty well-grounded person like Doug alluded to, open-minded and yet at the same time willing to listen to other folks and other opinions, I think those are the basic fundamentals of a good team member.
So let's start at the very foundation. We're kind of dancing around it here. Let's just be very specific on it. What makes an effective investigator? Well, if you think about it, when you go into a client's home, let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's say that you are at home and you've got some person coming in to do some work at your house. Maybe it's to fix the plumbing or do some work or do something, and they come in. What do you expect of them? What do you like to see from them? Do you like to see somebody who's abrupt, who doesn't talk much, who is indifferent? None of us like that. So one of the most important things is good people skills, if not the most important. You need to have good people skills. You need to be able to be dialed in to people, connected to people. And so if you have a very courteous and professional greeting and demeanor when you go on an investigation and meet somebody, especially for the first time, that's imperative. It's just absolutely necessary. So try that. You know, how do I come off to other people when I'm on an investigation? You know, I mean, we've all seen people who really have a knack for that, and we've seen people who don't have a knack for that. So we want to emulate those people who have good people skills and who know how to connect with others. So that's important, because that's going to build a good impression, and it's going to reassure the client that they made a good choice in inviting us to come to their home. Because if you think about it, some people, I mean, think about it. We get usually called as a last resort, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, people will, I mean, they'll go to their psychoanalyst, they'll go to their counsel, search the web, they'll talk to whoever, and when the phenomena doesn't quit, then they call us. So they're already apprehensive, some are scared, nervous, that kind of a, what are we doing that's reassuring that client that they're safe, you know, that things are good, that you're going to be able to handle it in a professional way? That's why we need to have the good people skills. That's why we need to be grounded.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you anymore, Doug. I think that, you know, first and prior, absolutely imperative when doing an investigation. If your team doesn't have the skills, you are going to be in real trouble as far as getting legitimate information or data from that investigation. Because if your folks come in and they don't have that kind of presence and courtesy, because you are being invited into somebody's home as a guest, even though you are an investigator, you know, you're sick with that person, and you're going to lose with the family, and you may have a legitimate investigation that you, that a member of your team has minimized your effect by her.
Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot on this program about doing no harm, and akin to that is not promoting fear. So if you go into a client's home the first time and we're meeting them, and we have those good people skills, and we're down to earth, we're grounded, and we're attentive, and, you know, we're smiling a little bit when we speak to them and reassuring them, that is not promoting fear, and that's what we want. We don't want to promote fear, even by what we say. And how many times have we heard stories where some in group has some member, often a psychic, who says, you know, something to the effect of, you've got a demon or you've got a nasty spirit, and you're going to have to get some, you know, priest or shaman or whoever to come in and get rid of it, to cleanse the house. That's all promoting fear. And honestly, from a research point of view, that's mostly bunk. That's crap.
Well, you know, the
one
other
person's
thing too, Doug,
opinion.
The other thing that's really important is when we get those cases, I think that shows us a larger picture about that particular group of individuals, because what does that say immediately to you? Because we do have to wear our psychology hats at all times when we're doing an investigation. But what does that tell you immediately about the belief system of that group?
Mm-hmm.
It tells you immediately that they believe in evil spirits. They believe in manifestations that can hurt people. And, you know, I just get this picture in my mind of once that type of investigator comes to your home, the minute they start picking up those vibes or they're hearing that from their psychics, that they get real antsy and want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And bail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've actually seen that happen. And so that gives everybody a black eye when we have people that, you know, because somebody, that may make that person who has an investigation not on our soul.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We've been fortunate because we've had people that have called us and trusted us after that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But how many folks out there went out and did more harm than good? And they don't do it out of malice. They do it simply because whatever they think's in that house fits into their details with their own personal belief system.
And Ange in the chat room made a good point that that goes a long way to help fearful people, and he's absolutely correct. And that's what we're alluding to, but I'm glad that you mentioned that, Ange. You know, empathy. Be empathetic. Be reassuring.
Good point.
And don't say things that even allude could be some mean, nasty anything there, because that is just not the case. That just doesn't happen. I mean, a couple of weeks ago we had Brad Steiger on, and you know, he talked about that incident that they had. And coming from Brad Steiger, I believe him. You know, I believe that they had something. However, it was also very clear, or the circumstances strongly suggested that they were dealing with PK, psychokinetic energy, perhaps enhanced by an entity and the young girl that was there. But still, they weren't harmed. And the myth that doing this, especially ghost research, is could potentially harmful in some way, you know, it's just not real. It's the stuff of Hollywood. Now,
think of how somebody would feel if you went into their house and they had a Ouija board sitting there, and the first thing they did as soon as they walked to the threshold of your house and spied that Ouija board would be like, oh my gosh, we got to step out of here because you got a portal opener there, you know? It's like a bottle opener that's, you know, and the house is just flying with demons.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff happens, unfortunately.
And it does. And that's the kind of crap that, frankly, we're trying to educate beyond. That's what Paranexus exists for. And at the risk of pissing people off, you know, I'm going to say it. We are not an association of ghost hunters. Ghost hunting is a fad, and it's made up of people who are thrill seekers and drama queens and all that. Now, people are going to probably be coming back to me on that, and I don't care. And now, do I mean all of them? No, I don't. But there's a fad going on, and that's what we are not. We're trying to, and that's where most of the problems come from. That's where the promotion of fear comes from. That's where, and we've heard so many stories. They're all over the place where these groups don't know what they're doing and don't know that they don't know what they're doing. Go in and make the comments, oh, you're using a Ouija board. Oh, my God. You know, you can't do that. That'll invite demons. Or, oh, my God, you know, you're listening to self-hypnosis. That'll open a channel to demonic forces. That's all pure, unadulterated BS. It just is. It's a belief system on the part of the investigator. And as an investigator, we cannot go in with those kind of belief systems and be an effective investigator. That's just the bottom line. So be a serious researcher. Have a passion for it, but try to move away from the drama, the thrill-seeking, and all that, if that's an issue for you. It's not an issue for everybody, but it is an issue for so many. What we're looking for is groundedness, stability, reasonableness, rationality. All those factors are going to help an investigator to come off as in an empathetic way, to come off with good people skills, to come off in a way that reassures the client.
Yeah, we've got to be the calm in the center of the storm. I mean, think of the psychological storm that's going on when you come into somebody's home. And, you know, I'm always reminded of two things. I always think of, you know, the famous Ghostbusters episode when Brian just, the dude run episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fortunately, we've never had that happen to us, but we've had a similar incident where somebody went over to, they were working with us in conjunction, and all of a sudden they went to a house, and the first investigation, everybody on the team has seen a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
ghost in sneakers and a jumpsuit. It's just like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wait a minute.
I mean, could it happen? Yes, but how often does that stuff happen? So we have to, you know, and if we're self-confident, which is another thing, we're not going to have those times when we, I don't know, how do you put it, we're not going to be excitable. We're not going to be prone to a thing. We're going to go in with an open mind, lack because just see what we got. And that's important. You can't ever prejudge. You've got an open mind, see what you're, and 90% of the time, you're going to be dealing with something that's explainable and not paranormal in any way, shape, or form. Let's,
as long as you're being candid tonight, the things I think that you also have to keep in mind is that if you, to some degree, new investigator or somebody that's known with your group, you got to make sure that they don't contaminate themselves with a lot of knowledge about what would be going to investigate and how that may interfere with your investigation or color the behavior of people that are participating in the investigation if it's disclosed. If somebody comes to you somewhere, they're not saying they're psychic and they're getting all these hits or they're spreading information about your investigation, you know, it completely invalidates the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. It does. There's a couple of questions in the chat room. Johnny makes a comment. This is more of a comment, but it's apropos. There's also too many investigators' websites out there that only talk about all experiences being demonic in nature. That is no way to get someone to want to open up. And I couldn't agree more. So if you are an investigator and you have a website, what message is your website sending? Does it send the message that you are superstitious? Does it have blood dripping and graphics that promote fear? I mean, that's one of the biggest things, biggest reasons why we will deny somebody a website award is because it promotes fear. And we've seen some. Now, I've seen some excellent websites, but they have a little thing, you know, that promotes fear. You know, just say no to Ouija boards or something. I don't know what the heck is up with that, but it's... You can't promote fear. And so if all you're talking about is cases that are demonic or that are scary, that's the drama. That's the thrill seeking. Because in the real world of paranormal research, that stuff just doesn't go on. It only goes in, it mostly goes on in the minds of untrained researchers, investigators. That's where it happens. And most of paranormal stuff happens in people's minds. That's why 90% of these cases are explainable. And it goes for ufology, too.
Yep. That's absolutely correct. And, you know, I think the more, you know, if you're looking at, you know, the qualities that make a good investigator in a new person or a relatively new person, it's going to take time, and you're going to have to be patient. I mean, if you see some red flags, you know, don't jump on it right away, but just kind of wait it out and see what happens. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, the best members of your team are going to be, I can tell you, this is my personal opinion and my most candid opinion, are going to be usually going to be the people that show up every time, that are willing to help out, that you never have a problem with interacting with other people, and, you know, they do whatever they can to support each other. Those are the people that are usually going to work it out. Those are the ones that are saying, if there's an investigation 200 miles away, the first ones are going to raise their hand and say, I want to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep, the passionate ones. Now,
yeah.
Now, Ange makes a comment. I believe that some people are so tensed up that a lot of PK is happening around them. He's seen it happen with candy bars scooting across the floor with no human hands touching them. That'd be cool to see. But, you know, here's the point of this. And this comes back to being grounded and calm. Now, you and I have both seen researchers who are excitable, easily excitable, and we've had them on the team in the past. Go in, if you take all that energy, that excitableness, and you go in on an investigation, you tend to feel the atmosphere, if you will, with energy, your excitableness. If you're talking a lot, if you're zipping here and zipping there and doing this and doing that and talking and all that, it fills the atmosphere with energy. and it tends to excite things rather than calm things. So an effective investigator is going to go in with a calming effect. So you go in and you tend to calm the atmosphere rather than excite it. Important, because the quiet are excitable, usually. They're already fearful. They're already scared. They're already anxious. So go in with a calm demeanor and going to do a lot that just by being calm, level-headed, grounded. You're going to explain the situation right there, because that's going to tend to calm the client. And if the client is psychically sensitive, which they tend to be, that's going to help calm the PK events.
And I'll say to you, like, you know, we have in our own spirit team website that, you know, do you think I'm crazy?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we heard?
Every time.
You know, you think I'm crazy because what's going on? And you know, I can't, there's a famous person, I can't remember who it was, said that the madness is the product of an overtaxed mind. You know, so who's to say that somebody's driving themselves a little batty because they're hearing, thinking things? And, well, in reality, maybe they're not there, but maybe that person is, like Doug talked about a few moments ago, maybe they're sickly sensitive. That's been a very big part of our investigations, mm-hmm. Yeah. The most remarkable part.
Mm-hmm. And that makes
sense to people. It does. It makes, especially when you talk to the people and you go, sometimes it will tell you right up front, and then the investigation comes down to it, and you're really not finding anything maybe as significant as they had hoped. Then, well, maybe, you know, you think maybe you're psychic, or you ask if they've experienced certain things, and all of a sudden you find, yeah. Or, well, my grandma used to be, mm-hmm. you know, grandpa, or something like that, and it's just like, wow.
I mean, how common is that? It happens about every time.
Very. And once again, you could argue that that's part of a belief system, too, you know, that's been passed. But nonetheless, maybe a person does have a gift. It's a combination of the two. I don't know, but it's pretty remarkable sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike asked a question in the chat room. When using a psychic on a team, what's the best way to interview them to provide confidence in their reaction to the case?
That's a good question.
Yeah, and my answer is I never debrief the psychic in front of the client, and the psychics are always instructed to not really talk much about what they're picking up on in front of the client before we've had a chance to talk about it privately.
Mm-hmm. And by all means, they have to be hammered. I mean, because I've suspected that some people have claimed that they've been psychic in the past have been contaminated. They already know what's going on, and you know, and that gets into another all weird dynamic, psychological dynamic. And I think it's extremely important to hammer in the fact that everybody must not contaminate themselves mm-hmm. with any preconceived notion by something they've read or something they've heard. They need to put it out of their mind. And that comes down to personal integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say, Doug?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like, you know what? If I ask you or I tell you something in confidence, I'm going to expect you to maintain that, either that my confidence or do whatever it takes to protect that confidence. So, you know, you really have to have integrity sometimes to do that, because it could be very easy to make yourself look good and say something like, I know that somebody was murdered here, but you read it on the Internet somewhere.
Right. So, you know, that's another part of being an effective investigator is the integrity. What are you doing this for? And it comes right back to, are you doing this because you want to know, because you have an interest in it, because you have a passion for it? Is that why you're doing it, or are you doing it because you're wanting to see a ghost, or, you know, you want to see something? Because, and frankly, the latter thing is not the way to go. Don't do it because you want to see a ghost or because you want to experience some scary moment. Do it because you want to know. I've said this many times, and in fact, it's part of the Paranexus mission statement. The reason we're doing this is to better understand the human condition. We want to know, what impact does life after death have on the human condition, if in fact we can prove it. And that goes with UFOs as well. What impact does ufology or UFOs or aliens have on the human condition? What does it mean to us as human beings? How do we interface or interact with these phenomena that we can't yet explain? It's all about understanding who we are, where we're at, where we're going. The big three questions: why are we here, where do we come from, and, you know, where are we going?
Absolutely.
So far we've covered a number of things. Let me just sum up what we've talked about so far. Got to be grounded, rational, have a calming effect on folks. You need to have good people skills. Go in, infuse confidence, and reassure the client that they made a good choice in selecting you. I think that's one thing that doesn't get brought up hardly ever. We need to validate that client. It's no different than customer service. You know, if I choose to go to a particular vendor or company and they treat me like crap, which many of them do, they don't understand. They're not validating or reassuring me that I made a good choice in selecting them. And I could even stretch it out a bit further and say that they almost insulted me because I looked up and chose them, and yet I made the wrong decision. What is that? You know, how do I feel about me for making a wrong decision? I mean, some people are that way. So infuse that confidence, let they made a good choice. And then make sure you watch what you say and do. Don't promote fear. Don't say anything offhanded that can promote fear. Psychics, make sure that they don't know any about it beforehand, and that goes for the rest of your team. You as the founder or the case manager may have to, of course, will have to know what's saying. You don't have to share that stuff. Share it with your team members. Try to help them to remain neutral and no preconceived notions. So those are some of the things that we've discussed so far. So what else goes into making an investigator effective? Well,
how about stability?
Okay, absolutely. How so?
Well, showing up on time, properly groomed. You know, if you're responsible for carrying some equipment, you got it. When you get to your investigation site, if you're assigned to one area or you're assigned to do a vigil, you're not wandering around the house. I would say responsibility and discipline.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good point, too. Responsibility, dependability, reliability. I mean, every group faces this. You get people who watch the TV shows. They think it's a certain way. They join the group. They discover that it's nothing like TV. And then they don't show up, or they're not as reliable, or they're not as into it. Well, if you're going to do it, then do it. And if you're not going to do it, then don't do it. Don't do it halfway. Do it again. It goes back to the same question. Why are you doing this? What is your purpose for being an investigator and a researcher in the first place? If it is because you want to know and you want to make a contribution to humanity and be involved in explaining some of this stuff, then great. That means that you're going to do it. And if you're going to do it, then do it. Don't halfway do it or half-ass do it. Be responsible.
Yeah, don't be afraid. You know, if it's a passion that you've really been interested in, you know, the other side of the coin is finding a good group, too. You know, and if you've got a passion like I know I did, and I was very fortunate because I found the spirit team, look around, you know.
Yes. And
don't be afraid. If you want to do it, there's good groups out there that will take you in. You'll get an opportunity.
And
if your head's screwed on straight, you're going to realize that it's not all Hollywood, and I think most people who are really serious about this know that, and they sometimes are just a little reticent to contact somebody.
And, you know, even if there isn't a group in your area that's fitting your philosophy, you can still do this on your own. You can join Paranexus and be a certified Paranexus field investigator.
Absolutely.
You can do it under the auspices of Paranexus. So, I mean, there's a great thing there. This whole idea of needing to be part of a group is, again, yeah, it's not necessary. You can, and there's benefits and advantages, but there are also advantages to having a group of two or a group of three. Which leads us to another thing that we've talked about in the past. Effective investigators do not take more people than are absolutely necessary.
Oh, I'll hold to that.
Yeah.
You know, we evolved to that point because, you know, I think we started off, we tried to do a lot of data collection, and then, you know, and I think a lot of, I think we just kind of came to that point where we realized, along with working closely with our primary psychic, Gregory, that wasn't the best possible approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there was anything there, and it is, if it is elusive as we think it may be, it's going to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's too many energies in there. Maybe the energy, if there is something in there, feeds off that anxiety. And then all of a sudden you get a calming thing or calming focus that comes in, or strangers. It doesn't pick up on our energy. It just backs off. Especially if you come charging in with 20 people with gadgets in their hands and cameras flashing and cool T-shirts on and, you know.
Well, here's another aspect of being an effective investigator that really encompasses everything we've talked about so far. How do you view spirits? And let's focus on the parapsychological slash haunting aspect of it right now. How do you view spirits? Do you view spirits as this thing that needs to be hunted, or do you view spirits and ghosts like people? And just for those of you who like to make a differentiation between spirit and ghost, feel free. I don't. Spirit, ghost, doesn't matter to me. You know, they are a spirit entity, whatever you call them, interdimensional. How do you view them? If you view them as people, and the evidence would seem to suggest that when people pass on, you know, they don't miraculously change. They don't miraculously become a different person than they were in the flesh. So, and many of them, as some of the evidence would seem to suggest, some of them may not know their past. Some of them may have unfinished business. You know, the variety of reasons why they stick around. They might be afraid. I mean, we've encountered some that are afraid they're going to go straight to hell because of religious beliefs. So they didn't automatically lose any of those beliefs when they died or when they passed on. So how do you view these spirits? Do you view them as you would people? In other words, if you're on an investigation and some of these groups will really, really go after some of these spirits and taunt them, would you do that to a flesh and blood person, a stranger that you didn't even know? That's only one aspect. But think about this. Excuse me. If we go to a party that we don't know everybody there, some people are shy, aren't they? Some people just kind of hang back and don't really mingle much. Then you have others who will mingle a lot and are really adept at, you know, making friends and introducing themselves. So you're going to have a variety of personalities. Well, the same is true with spirits. So if you take a bunch of people in to a location that the spirit doesn't know, they might be one of the ones that wants to pull back and not be involved. You might have one that wants to get out in the forefront occasionally. So you have to view it as if you're going in, and if there are spirits there, they're people. They are people. They're just like us. How would we approach them? What would we say? How would we view them? Would we be courteous to them? Help them in some way, if possible, maybe to alleviate their fears. Those are all important things.
You know, and even Doug, even if I think we always have a tendency, I think humans have a tendency to anthropomorphize everything. And even if that is not the case, and what we're dealing with is various kinds of energies, then what does it hurt to come across that way?
Yeah,
you know, to come across, you know, like, I'm here not to create any problems. I'm, you know, like, here to help, you know. So what can I do and be respectful to whatever's there?
I mean, isn't that what we're really there for, is to resolve the situation?
Sure, if we
can. I mean, well, that's what we should be there for, is to resolve the situation somehow. I mean, there's quite a number of groups out there who call themselves, well, it doesn't really matter what they call themselves. What matters is what they're in it for. They're in it to observe, and that's it. And that's all they want to do. And to me, that's just flat out wrong. if you're going to do this, you want to go, yes, you have to observe. That's part of the whole deal. But you also want to understand, seek to understand. You want to identify what's going on. And if there is truly paranormal activity going on there and it's bothering the client, you need to resolve it somehow. And so that's when you go in with the attitude of, how can I help? I'm here to help the client. I'm here to help the spirit. What can I do to help? What can we do to help? You know, let's go from that direction, from that approach. How can we help? And then try to get that thing resolved. Because sometimes you have a spirit who's just trying to get noticed. That's so often the case. They're trying to get attention. And the way that they're trying to get attention may be frightening the client who doesn't really understand what's going on. And so you've got basically two confused individuals, the spirit and the client. And one of them is frightened. So if we can address those issues with the spirit, and the spirit moves on, crosses over, whatever they do, then you've fixed the problem. You've resolved it. The spirit's problems are fixed now, and the client's problems are fixed by default.
But, you know, Doug, that also speaks to a larger issue. And so, you know, and I know that in this, a good investigator or any group that has integrity and responsibility realizes that may require on their part to the client that you just don't go there one time. You
right.
may have to go there several times. You may have to provide emotional support from a distance. You have to be available to them. And you know, I think that's gone a long, long way. That's just simple psychology. But by the same token, that's gone a long, long way to help reassure our clients when we see the spirit team do the bulk of our investigations early that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have that commitment. It doesn't matter if they're 100 miles away. Each of you, if they get freaked out about something again, you need to be willing to go back.
And you go back.
Oh, I can't because I've been, you know, reruns of this on TV or, you know, along those lines. You gotta go.
And you resolve it. If you work a case till you resolve it, and that's your intent, then when you're done, the stuff doesn't usually come back. Now,
but also, too, Doug, don't you think it's important that folks understand, too, and don't get me wrong, I'm not disagreeing with you, that there's some cases that there'll be no resolution.
Sure there
that,
is.
That's the hardest part sometimes for the investigator, because it's not that there has been resolution on the part of the investigator, it's your client doesn't have the resolution.
Exactly. That is the key. Yes, some clients, you're not going to be able to resolve it because the problem is emanating from the client. And, you know, most investigators are not psychologists. Even though we have to be adept at psychology, we're not psychologists. So you are, Grant, but, you know, most of them are not. So, you know, you can't really go too far with them. You can make recommendations, but, yeah, you're right. There are some that can't be resolved.
Well, you know, like I've told you before in the past, like as far as psychology is concerned, you know, a very wise person told me one time, it's 90% heart and 10% skill. And a lot of people are natural psychologists or social workers
mm-hmm.
or whatever and how they interact. It's just basically having people skills. And as Angie alluded to earlier, being empathetic, that's one of the key characteristics of being a good counselor, also being a good investigator, also good listening skills.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Amen, brother.
For a good investigator, because if you can establish, first of all, one of the key things that counselors do is establish a rapport with the client.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get to the client so that they trust you, and you'll find that once you get the client to trust you and you've established that rapport with them, they're going to tell you what's going on sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They may be very comfortable telling you what's going on.
And they will.
And, yeah, and you may get more than you bargained for. Right, Doug?
Yes, you are. Right. But, you know, it's all part of the deal. And
yeah.
And so reassure them, build that rapport. And when you're interviewing, ask a question and shut up. Don't fill in the blanks. Don't ask leading questions. Don't imply anything with your questions. And don't be too quick to fill in that silence, because sometimes you'll ask a question and the client may not answer immediately. Maybe they're thinking, maybe they're climbing up. Don't let that get to you. You know, they say that that nature abhors a vacuum. And when you get that silence, it can be a bit awkward. So when you ask a question, just shut up. Let 5, 10, 15 seconds pass with silence. Let them compose their thoughts. Let them answer in their own way. That's another incredibly important part of being a good interviewer.
Yeah, and you know, you ask open-ended questions so that you can't get a yes or no answer. Try to think of stuff that's going to get them to open up to you. And, you know, you may find some stuff that within the first 20 minutes of a good interview, you can see which way it's going. And then, you know, you may say, wow, this seems to be all psychologically based. Or you may go, whoa, this has some very interesting things going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a double-edged sword. It can go either way. And, you know, if you don't conduct that initial interview right, you may end up chasing your tail. You know, Doug, I know that you and I have sat in on many interviews, and I can recall one where the people weren't being candid with us until we got to the end of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just our patience, and mm-hmm. just kept asking the same questions in a
non-different
manner. Yeah, that we finally got to the truth.
So be persistent.
It set us free, didn't it, Doug?
Yeah. Yeah, the truth will set you. Don't go there. Okay. A couple of questions in the chat. Like, what are the pros and cons to having one case? Is that based on what kind of investigation it is? Good, yeah, it is. Good question. Glad you brought that up. Now, he knows the answers, but I appreciate him putting that in there because we do need to cover that. Now, typically with haunting type cases, we recommend that at least two people go. Now, I will just say investigation, I highly recommend at least two people go. But do to have to go? Well, no, two people don't have to go. It just depends on a lot of things. And to be an effective investigator, you got to use good judgment and intuition. For example, if I'm a lone researcher and I get a client from a woman who lives alone, I'm taking it with me, and I'm going to encourage my client to have a good friend there. I'm not going to ever put myself in a situation because I don't know this person. I know me, but I don't know that person. And so
that would be a very compromising position.
Would.
Absolutely.
You know, this field does draw its fair share of people who are, how do I put it? I'm still trying to figure
eccentric.
It out nicely. Yes, eccentric, shall we say. And, you know, if I go there as a lone investigator, tell this gal what she wants, maybe she could make some claims that I tried to assault her or took something or did something. I'm not going to put myself in that situation. So use good judgment when you go on these cases. And if it is a person who lives alone, especially a lady, a female, make sure they have a friend there. And the same is true vice versa. If you're a female investigator and you're going to a place that's just got a gentleman or a man there, make sure you take somebody, make sure they have somebody there. It's just good business, if you will. It just makes good sense to cover yourself that way. It just use your own good judgment. There's not a one-size-fits-all here, but those are the pros and cons. If you have any further questions on that in the chat room. Ange asked a question, have you ever tried an EMF on the investigator to see if excess energy may be emitted from him or her? I was just thinking of somebody. Yeah, we had to throw a tri-field next to her. And
probably would have blown it up.
Yes.
right off the scale. Yeah,
we must be thinking of the same person. So,
yeah.
No.
That person was very energetic.
Yeah.
One might even characterize her as yes, absolutely.
Centric.
Maybe a little manic.
Yeah.
But a nice person, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's funny. I hadn't read all the questions before. Yeah, it's funny. But, you know, tri-field meters will pick up humans. You know, I mean, you can use them almost as a motion detector in some cases. So, good question. So, at any rate, what else goes into being an effective investigator? We covered a lot of good stuff. And notice that we haven't really talked about knowing how to operate equipment. Frankly, that's just, you learn that. I think some of the equipment, pieces of equipment are a little oversold. I think what you need to do is, the most important piece of equipment you take in there is your grounded, rational mind.
Your brain, that's
right. Devoid of any preconceived notions. That's the most important piece. Yeah.
Now, I still think, though, I think there's a couple of key pieces of equipment that I think you wouldn't disagree with me. I think the trifeel, a natural trifeel meter, is really excellent to take with you, especially if you put it in a stationary position.
Yeah.
I also think that the temperature gauges that we have, the sophisticated laser ones now, are really important, because you're going to get, if there are drops or there's cold spots or there's areas where energy, you know, is manifesting itself differently for whatever reason, it'll catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, can you put it in a bank and, you know, well, no, but maybe if you get two people doing it at the same time, you know, that's going to be an interesting or intriguing piece of data. You know, which also brings me to another point about investigators that's really important, is how well do they document if called upon? How well do they document? How well do they articulate what they observe?
You need to. I mean, and that's why we did the logbook that's available on Paranexus. You know, a lot of people use those, and it's a good thing. Of course, you don't need it. You can just use a good pad, but you need to document that stuff and document your feelings, document what's going on, document red flags that you see.
Well, you know, the nice thing about the log is Doug, is, you know, like, I, as you well know, I'm a big believer in, or I do a lot of speculation about how various energy fields interact, you know, with the geomagnetic fields of the Earth. And so, you know, if you're having, you know, a full moon, or you're having solar storms, I think that may have some bearing on, you know, how the energy fields interact. So I think it's important to document that stuff when you can. And, you know, if you're serious about doing good baseline readings, you need to have people that are going to follow through on that. I mean, we've had some people in the past that, you know, they, one of the best characteristics about that investigator was their documentation skills.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, that person always did excellent baseline and pre and post, you know, investigation, you know, readings, again, really important. You know?
Definitely. So, good talking.
Yeah, sure.
So, another piece, of course, is a recorder. And that's, I guess, another thing that makes an effective investigator is, what kind of evidence are you looking for? Are you looking for more than just a clearly understandable EVP? Or are you looking for something that's meaningful? That's important. When I go on an investigation, when we do, we're looking for meaningful evidence. What is it about our overall objective of understanding the human condition? If we do get an EVP, is it a class 1, 2, or 3, or is it a null? And that's on the Kayin scale. Meaningful, is it? You know, I want meaningful evidence. I don't want more stuff I can't explain. I'm tired of that. I'll be frank. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of stuff that you just don't know, like EMF spikes, stuff like that. Well, what was responsible for it? Well, you know, it wasn't here at all before, then it was here for a moment, and now it's gone. And, you know, it could be a ghost, or it could have been some piece of equipment next door that got turned on that was defective. Who knows what it is? And I get tired of trying to understand things that are so dang ambiguous. What I really want is something meaningful, and that's why I think that the most meaningful evidence we can get at this point are EVPs. I think that EVPs pretty much all but prove the existence of life after death. That's my personal opinion. That's the strongest, most compelling evidence that we have for life after death. So, we've talked about some stuff. Another area that we really haven't touched on much is in the area of ufology, and that's trace evidence. And if you are a ufologist or you're into that and you do happen to come across that, obviously there's some points to keep in mind, and we're not going to have time to go into those, but make sure you don't corrupt the evidence, make sure you don't contaminate it, make sure you have your kit there with the gloves and the containers and different things, and you know, you get the evidence and then make it available.
And you know, it might be nice for those people that are interested to get themselves an old Geiger counter, because you know, you get those cheap enough, and you know, when you're looking for trace evidence, it might come in handy, especially if it's a, you know, somebody says that's a landing site.
Yes. So,
you know, Doug, I just look. I say something before we
go ahead. Tonight,
and that's you know, when we were talking about and you brought it up, and I was really glad you did, about you know being your own independent investigator out in the field with Paranexus. You know, I thought to myself, I wish I could have elaborated on it then, because that's the best of all possible worlds to become part of us. Because what's going to happen is you're going to have the support of everybody here at Paranexus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not here to critique you. We're here to help you, you know, because we don't have all the answers, and it just may be your data, or if you're driven and you'd like to do this kind of investigation, don't be shy. You're going to find yourself among friends,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to be supportive, and that's our mission, is to help you become the best possible investigator you can while making a contribution to the field.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we
join us.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing. You do have the support, and we invite investigators to go to paranexus.org, look at the CPFI info, and join us. You know, be a part of this. We don't compete with anybody. We're not competitors. I will not compete with anybody. We won't. We want to share. We want to work with people. We want to find answers, and that's what Paranexus is all about, education and research. Now, in the last couple of minutes that we have, real quick, Kiku, I guess it is, in the chat asks a question. In a big inside area, like a huge abandoned mental hospital, would a fog machine show ghosts walking around the area? And Mike just posted, too, about strobe lights. And there has been some suggestive evidence to show that might show something. At this point, I don't have a concrete answer, but it's certainly something to try along with the strobe. See what happens. I mean, this is the kind of creative thinking that we may need to use to
got
to
think out of the box, folks.
Yeah, so good question. Now,
because we're paranormal investigators, we're already there, so don't let it hold you back.
Yeah, we're looking for those ideas. So, folks, we're winding down to the close of another program. We appreciate, and again, and I just want to emphasize, if you catch the beginning, Paraships now include web hosting, real web hosting. You can host sites on your account. Annual memberships, $39 a year or $4.50 a month, $4.50 a month. Happy as a member, you get a lot of, I mean, you can't find web hosting along with the fits. And we've also got iCourse, the CLPI, the leader. The ufology course is going to be out probably late summer. So if you have an interest in UFOs, that's coming out. And we're also looking for staff positions. If you're looking for a newsletter editor, we're looking for a forum moderator, and you can find out more information on paranexus.org about those if you have any interest. Welcome our newest staff member, Jessica Jones, who is the media and public relations editor. And doing a bang-up job, have the links to our news page and Twitter so far. We're going to be setting up Facebook shortly. So take a look at that. Appreciate everybody's time. Thanks for joining us yet again for another show. We don't have a topic for next week's show, but we will post it on Paranexus. Grant, as always, it's a pleasure hosting the show.
Oh, yeah. It's a pleasure talking with everybody in our audience. And, you know, come back again next week, folks.
All right. Have a good week. Take care, everybody. Good night.
Bye.
in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paramex's universe.